Hi, Ebony.
Hi, Celine. It's good to see you.
We've decided to stop running. I've come back to fight alongside you, if you'll have us.
Of course we will.
It's the best news we could have hoped for. It's excellent.
Oh, is that so? What are these people doing here?
What is it, Lex?
What's got into you all? These three turn up and you act like there's some reason to celebrate. I don't think so.
So welcome to Series 4, Episode 50 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
And Sabine.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 50, the screenplay was done by Charles Hodges. It was directed by Peter Nathan, and the episode synopsis read out by myself. Amber, Jay and Ebony are shocked by the effects of the Paradise program on the city, while their return causes ripples among the Technos and the Mall Rats. Patch finds an alternative way to communicate with Dee. Alright. After trying to make an inconspicuous return to the city, and witnessing people already hooked on Paradise, Amber, Jay and Ebony return to the Mall and quickly begin talking about fighting back. Lex, however, currently profiteering from the status quo, angrily shoots them down and tries to argue that they should be biding their time while the city is peaceful. So yeah, panel, what do you make of Lex's reluctance to fight back and obviously the return of Amber, Jay and Ebony?
Okay, I'm going to start with just a synopsis of the whole episode. I think this is a good episode. I really do. I think the acting, the writing, the camera work, the lighting, some of the shots are all very creative and well done. We've got some really great performances, some strong writing here. I wish I cared. I wish I gave a damn. I don't. I was watching and I was thinking, this is a shame because I'm seeing some good stuff and I'm done. I'm so done. I don't care. I'm literally just like, okay, two more episodes and we're finished with this nonsense. And it makes this episode incredibly sad because this is an episode that shows a lot of great potential of what this whole season could have been if the writing had been this strong the whole way through. Almost everything that happens here makes perfect sense. Motivations are clearly laid out for why people are doing what they're doing. The way they're communicating feels human and normal and natural. And it doesn't matter. It can't fix anything.
There's just so many things in this first few scenes alone that's just, I don't know, it feels odd to me. Like, how are these city kids who've recently gotten power back having working computers outside? That's just the technology part of it that blows my mind. But what I found very interesting, though, is these three coming into the city with Jay having to point out where the cameras are, as if Ebony has no clue where the cameras are, and then Java being the one to quickly try and cover up that Ebony's back. Because for me, that was the most interesting part, the fact that Java saw her sister try to make Mega think that he didn't see her and went to her with a, we need to talk. I mean, Ebony covering that up, obviously, totally Ebony, makes sense. And as for Lex and his profiting from this, it's really, did we expect anything else from Lex? It's like, it's what he does. It's what he's good at. And yet, why would he pick another fight? I mean, apparently he's long since forgotten that there might be ways to get Tysanne back because, you know, he's thinking of her, but more mourning her as if she's never returning anyways. So, yeah, I'm not really surprised that he is not wanting to fight back.
The problem with Lex's reaction is that it is a normal reaction. He's even if he wasn't scamming, if that it wasn't his motivation, his reaction would still be completely valid to the return of these three people, because it's only going to cause them all rats trouble. It makes sense for him to be like, wait, we risked our own safety and protection to get them out of the city. Remember, the last time you guys were here, Jay was enemy number one. We had to sneak you out through sewers. You know what I mean? We were inviting havoc into our own lives to get you out of here. And now you're back and you're like, well, we're all going to fight now. And we're all supposed to just jump on board with that. It makes sense for somebody to be like, I don't think so. You guys don't get to decide that for the rest of us. You don't get to just waltz back in here after we went through all that trouble to get you to friggin' safety and put a bullet, like put a marker on us.
Yeah.
Thank you. That target. I couldn't find the word. And that makes sense. But of course, it's the same formula they've been using since season one when it comes to Lex. You give the right words to somebody whose motivations are nefarious so the audience won't trust what he's saying. And they've always done that with Lex. That is the part he plays. But it doesn't make the points he's making any less valid, you know? And I would have liked to see maybe a couple other characters, you know, pointing out he's not entirely wrong. How can we ensure, you know what I mean? Just have some misgivings about the return of these people. And I kind of like the way they find the city very quiet, you know, what is the price of peace? Lex says, the city is peaceful right now. Why are we going to stir everything up just because these three came back and said we should? Shouldn't we have a plan of what we're going to do? You know, and I will say that, you know, Sabine has a point that you've got kids who are literally so homeless that they don't have a roof over their head, but they do have extension cords and computers. So, you know, I would have preferred a little better staging for that, you know. So it's like, okay, I could buy it because they are out in the open with other computer tech exposed to the elements. And I buy that they have an extension cord. That's fine. But like, why isn't just inside the building? Why is it out here?
I just find it so freaking funny. I mean, I've done outdoor LAN parties. It's hilarious. And yeah, it's possible, but to see it on something like this, it's
like, why though? Like that. Like,
when it rains, what do they do with these computers?
Right. Like, I would have bought it. It would have been better if they'd had to look in a window and saw the kids were, you know, inside the warehouse. It just makes more. Granted, it's, you know,
or even a tent.
Yeah, something. Like they're stealing power, but like the problem is they're right next to a building, which is where they're clearly stealing the power from. Why aren't they just inside the building? But yeah, I get it. It's okay, but yeah, it does make you ask a few questions. The scene suffers from the fact that there's such bad writing in the rest of the season. Like, you know, Jay knowing where the cameras start and where there are breaks in the camera, that's something he should know, but it's never come into play. This whole time, that kind of knowledge of avoiding cameras and things like that has never really come into play or been useful in the story. So it's like putting it here, it makes sense for Jay to know this information and to utilize it to their, you know, their benefit. But, yeah, but where was this the whole time?
Where was it this when he was running?
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen Ebony stare directly at a camera, kissing Jay and just smirking, but it's like Jay was oblivious to that.
I don't mind the seeds that are being planted that Java actually has some sort of agenda, you know. But it does feel like, okay, so what is it like? Again, if you've turned her motivation into nothing but she hates Ebony, you know, it just, you know, but I don't mind her having some sort of agenda, like an actual agenda. I it's like, it's about friggin' time, but you're doing it when there's three episodes left of the season, you know, giving Java some sort of motivation of her own. And, Right. It's a little late to finally be doing this. I like the interplay, you know, of what it leads to. But the problem with actually writing your characters is interesting at this late in the game, just shines a spotlight on how poorly you've been doing it this whole time.
Ebony, it's time we straighten to feed things out. You need to know that I'm hereby drawing lines in the sand.
What?
Don't interrupt! I've decided that you will no longer make my life hell because that's what it's been. Every chance you've had, you've tripped me up and made me feel small. But today, it stops. From now on, you will not put me down. You will not tell me I'm stupid. And if you do any of that kind of stuff ever again, I swear I will make your life the misery you've made mine. You got that?
But it's surprised when Ebony bursts into tears and ends up comforting her sister about her worries over Jay and Amber. So yeah, what do you make of those scenes between Ebony and Siva?
Siva, you really are the nicest sister of them all. I was glad she's finally letting her have it. But yeah, Ebony breaking down to someone. I guess I'm glad it's towards Siva out of everyone, because her breaking down like this in front of anyone else would have been insane. But yeah, it shows Siva as the nicer sister.
I think both of these scenes are really well done, well acted, well shot, coloring, everything. I enjoy both of them a lot. I like how character motivated they are and that they're telling us something about who these people are, how they interact with each other, and what fuels them. Starting with Siva and Lex, I like the dynamics in that scene, the way Lex, he's in his own head, and, you know, rightfully annoyed at the situation, stating clearly what he's annoyed about. You know, I like how Siva's just like, well, then why are we bothering to put up with this? I don't want to do this anymore. You know, let's just go. He gives valid reasons why we're not going. You know, some of that's his pride and his ego, you know, all that stuff. I like the fact that they're so open with each other, how quickly he transfers from being pissed off about his own stuff to focusing on what is upsetting her. Again, it just highlights how poorly done Siva and Lex have been, you know, handled the entire season. Because the few moments when they have these things, they work really well, you know, and you can see there's something here. And I like how he just stops and he listens to her and she's able to express what she's feeling. And he immediately focuses on that. And, you know, like, whatever it takes, I won't let her do that to you again. You need to go in there and confront she's your little sister. Go, go drag her to filth if that's what you need to do. I'll have your back. We won't let them do that to you. I didn't know that you felt that way, you know, and so I thought that was a great scene. Nice vulnerability, nice closeness. And again, it just hints at, it does a better job of telling what Siva means to Lex than the whole season has. You know, just a scene like that, the way he shows his care and immediately blocks everything out to focus on what it is she needs and is trying to give her decent advice that's coming from his life experience, you know, and then I like the scene with Siva and Ebony. I love it. Again, it says so much about who they are. Siva comes in, guns blazing, you know, putting her line in the sand. And Ebony they immediately reverted to their childhood personas. Ebony being the baby sister, Siva being the older protective sister, the one who had to be the peacemaker between she and Java, you know, and it shows, like, the things we learn about Siva and how she had to play both sides between them and how she didn't automatically hate Ebony the way Java did, and tried to be a decent sister to her. But Ebony is so self-destructive, she takes everybody down with her, you know, and how quickly they revert to those childhood roles. I also think the scene works because Ebony, after she breaks down and talks to her sister and feels she can, that tells you right there that Siva was somebody, one of the few people in Ebony's childhood she could be vulnerable with, because we know how hard that is for Ebony to ever show vulnerability to anybody. And she doesn't hesitate to cry in front of her sister, break down, tell her in her insecurities. And then she acknowledges that her sister is right. I do cause a lot of problems for you. I'm sorry. I didn't come here for that. I promise. I'm not trying to make your life miserable. I'm not gunning for you. I don't want to be here. I love the way Siva, with the limited knowledge she has, tries to talk sense into her sister based on Ebony's past behavior with guys. Like, you do this, you get insecure, you get jealous, and then you get paranoid. And these are all true factors. It doesn't feel like she's gaslighting her because she hasn't seen Jay and Amber. You know, she didn't see what Ebony saw. So it makes sense for Siva to say this. It's very sensible to say, like, baby girl, you know what I mean? Like, don't demolish, don't self-destruct, don't make it a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know? And it made sense to me that by the end, Siva's like, forget anything I said. I didn't mean any of it. As a big sister myself, and I've got a really good relationship with my brothers, I have been in these moments where I am reading them to filth, rightfully so, because they did something they weren't supposed to, and how quickly I can forgive them. I can forgive everything they did. And it's like, it's cool. I love you so much. I was just mad and I didn't mean any of that. And so it just felt like a very real moment between people who have an actual history. I believe these two people grew up together and the dynamic was formed at a young age.
I agree. But I think my biggest issue with this is that it comes at episode 50.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, Siva should have had this outburst at Ebony from episode 1 when they meet each other. Like, it just feels very late in their interaction history from for this whole season to now for this to happen at this point. It's frustrating, to put it mildly.
It's like someone else took over the reins and said, wait, we forgot something.
Right. And
there's so much character development we've skipped.
And as much as I understand everything that Siva's saying about what Ebony did to her, that's still not enough to want to kill her. You know what I mean? Her and Java to be so targeted to killing Ebony. You know what I mean? It's not enough, I'm afraid. I need more backstory.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was fantastic. Well acted. I just...
That's why I said it doesn't fix anything.
No, no.
Like, it's really good, but it don't fix anything.
I feel like we say this all the time, in a bubble, it's amazing, but you take it as a whole, it's like...
It's like we need
season
a full...
Season 4, nothing but bubbles of greatness.
And honestly, if there was... Like, I know we got the Bird of Small Rats book with some extra backstory on some things that happened in early season 1, but the one we really needed... was this one. Because we needed that backstory for what happened between these girls.
And the problem is, it's too late now. Whatever story you come up with now, it's just going to sound silly and stupid.
Yeah. I will say that season 5 at least tries to delve into the dynamic of the three sisters together. And I can appreciate the effort to show how torn between the two Siva has always been, so that I can actually retroactively understand that Siva probably didn't want to kill Ebony at all, but that there are times when she sides with Java, you know, mm-hmm. when Ebony has burned them both, it is far easier to just side with whatever Java wants, because Siva is susceptible to the person she's closest to at any given time. She takes aspects of their personality. They shore her up. So think about it. When she and Ebony are together and it's just the two of them, they get on like a house on fire. They get on really well, actually. Mm-hmm. There doesn't seem to be much animosity between them at all. But when she's with Java, Java's able to dig into everything Ebony's ever done, and that fuels the dislike, that fuels the hurt, the past issues that Siva might have been feeling, any resentment. And so you see Siva be like, no, you're right. Yeah, she needs to go. She's the problem. You know what I mean? In the way that when she's with Lex, Siva finds her strength, her confidence, you know? And season 5 at least does try to explore that. And part of Siva's storyline in season 5 is detaching from all of these people who have that have influence over her and finding her own voice. And so she says goodbye to Lex. She says goodbye to Ebony. She says goodbye to Java and finds her own feed. So I you know, I do feel at least they continue to try to explain, how does Sima go from like, yeah, my sister needs to die, to, oh, it's all water under the bridge. Like, we're cool. I didn't mean anything I said about me hating you. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like her voice was strangled growing up with those two strong personalities, you know? Somebody cared and they wanted to explore it in the next season.
Unless we want to explore in the other sister, because as Jarva tries to convince Ram to drop the search for Jay and Ebony, Mega sides with Ram and stresses the importance of catching them. Later, Jarva catches Mega trying to get access to a headset, and she helps him, trying to win him over, but it turns out to have been a setup, with Ram later confronting her about it. So yeah, how did you react to the rise of Mega and yet more tests for Jarva?
Not gonna lie, I like the rise of Mega. At least they took the time to show us how he slowly gets his higher ranking. And setting up Jarva? Yeah, that fits. I like that he doesn't just try to get into a door without any tools, because he actively tries to pick a lock with the proper tools for that. So kudos to propping department for that. As for Ram continuously testing Jarva, I don't know, it's part of me is like, but why? But the other part of me is like, well, his other two wives betrayed him, so I get that he's kind of suspicious.
I love how enigmatic Mega is being portrayed. I like it because it puts us in Java's shoes. You're constantly on the back foot with Mega. You never know where he stands. You never know what's going to come out of his mouth. I guarantee that he set it up so she would catch him trying to get in that door. Like, he didn't really need that headset. You know, he was just playing with her and she fell for it. I think that works very well for his character, because you just really never know which way Mega's coming at you and what's going on in his head and what game of chess he's playing while everyone else is playing checkers. You know, I think that is well done. Set up. It's again late in the game, but whatever. Since he's going to be the big baddie for next season, I'll take it. Ram constantly testing Jarva at this point has just become tiresome. You know, like, if you don't trust her, just cut her loose. Like, come on, dude. You know what I mean? Like, your judgment of whether you can trust a woman is bad. It's been bad this whole time. And if Java's standing by your side and trying to chase off everyone who would ever hurt you or betray you hasn't been enough, and you're always laying into her over these smallest infractions of misuse, trust, blah, blah, blah. Cut her loose. I'm sick of seeing it. You know what I mean? The things he would forgive the others for, and yet Jarva, it's like, okay, so what's the big deal? She gave him a headset, and he treats it like, you can't be trusted. And it's like, are you freaking kidding me? This, you're gonna flay her alive for this? And maybe if they explored more the power dynamic and how this is what he enjoys, having this power over her, which he didn't have over his other wives. Like, if you explored that, that's what it's all about for Ram, that he likes that no matter what he does, Jarva will keep coming back for more. Fine, maybe that could have been their love story, but you didn't tell that story. So I'm just sick of the constant tests when it's like, if you don't friggin' trust her, just get rid of her.
I wonder how much it is Ram testing Jarva or Mega being smart enough to, you know, continuously do things like this to sow more doubt about Java's alliances, because it's definitely in Mega's favor.
I mean, I don't even mind if it was orchestrated by Mega, I'm stuck on that previous sentiment. What if Ram doesn't trust Jarva at this point, mere days before he's going to go into reality space heaven forever? Then just get rid of her. Like, I don't. It's just no point. This doesn't make sense for me. If you don't trust her, and especially because you're going to be trapped in reality space, then just get rid of her. This constant test every day, it doesn't make sense.
Sandra doesn't think smart. Sandra doesn't think lazy is that bad.
I wonder if it's the paranoia that came from, you know, thinking he could trust Ved, he could trust Siva, trust Jay.
I get all that, yeah. But all if of them you can't at this point, cut her loose, because what do you think's going to happen once you're trapped in reality space? Like, You're days away from it, so...
Why keep playing this game?
Why keep... Yeah, why?
Like, you don't trust her, dude. You don't trust why she's here. You don't trust why she's staying by your side. So just get rid of her at this point. You've gotten rid of everybody. You have rightful trust issues, as has been pointed out. So what are you holding on to with her? You don't even like her.
You can have a better version of her in reality space, man.
Like, what are you trying to prove? What test can she possibly pass at this point?
That's, you'll finally be like,
okay, all right, I'm convinced now. Mere hours before he goes under. Okay.
That's where my brain goes as well. There's no ultimate test that you're going to satisfy your kind of trust issues with her. So stop it and let go. Right. Focus on Mega then. Ugh.
So tiresome.
But yeah, I absolutely love Mega's games and how he's playing all of this. I'm glad they took the time to build it up.
He doesn't let anything show through that stone-faced facade. And I'm like, I love it. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, because we've not had a villain like that for...
Right! They're all so emotional, you know? And it's really nice to have a villain, an antagonist who seems pretty indifferent. you know what? He's like the perfect opposite of Top Hat.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Like, Top Hat had a crazy that was so fascinating because he too was also indifferent to some of the things he did and was so unpredictable in his crazy to the point he was actually kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, he's endangering our heroes and you're like, I am enjoying every minute of this guy. Mm-hmm. And then when he's done playing, he doesn't even care to see what will happen to them. He's like, I'm bored. I'm gone. And Mega just, like, he's on the same beautiful tier, just on the opposite side of that spectrum.
Absolutely.
Conceal, don't feel, baby.
Yeah. That's why he's so fascinated.
He has masking down to a T.
I love how Kaelin moves his mouth. It feels like the words are literally punching their way out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're struggling to leave his mouth. He's so careful with what he says that the words are fighting for their lives to get out of his mouth. Like, nobody can do a dead eye like Mega. You're desperately trying to read anything. Like, what's your plan? What is motivating you? What do you want? And he's just like, you'll never know.
I don't think we've ever seen anyone as calculating as Mega. I mean, Jaffa was very calculating in his ways, but Mega just takes things to another level.
Mm-hmm.
At least he's less mentally unhinged, or visibly mentally unhinged.
Well, see, the thing is, Jaffa didn't have a firm plan from the start. Like, it was more like Jaffa was trying things, realizing they worked, and then was like, okay, what else can I try? What else can I try? And then just kept going and the ball would move. And then it's like, okay, I have this. What if I try this? And then he falls in love with his own legend and stuff. Mega, though, had a plan from the start. He knew exactly what Mega as a character with like motivations is like the season 2 of the tribe. Like, he knew what the goal was from A to Z. And he was like, okay, so it's just a matter of implementing it. And sometimes I'm going to have to maneuver and improvise. But he knew where he wanted to go. Where Jaffa, his plan sort of just ran away from him, you know? Like, he's like, oh, I'm just going to, I want some kids to follow me. You know, I could enjoy that. So I'll give them a god to believe in. And then it's like, oh, I got these people who'll do anything I want. I think I'm going to kidnap a baby. Let's see if I can get them to do that. And it just kept, it snowballed from there. It was mostly him just seeing what he could get away with.
Whereas Mega comes across as someone who's been playing chess his entire life, planning every move, and playing video games forever with a...
methodically working through it every step of the way, biding his time, patience.
Perfect evil overlord.
And one of my favorite things about Mega is he clearly has trouble peopling. We see more of that in season 5, where he literally looks at human behavior and says, why? You know, like, he doesn't get it, but he's super good at reading people. That's wild. Like, he's really good at predicting how people are going to act, how they're going to behave, how they're going to react to things, and being able to use that. But when he sees people just being people, he's like, why though?
Yes, why would you bother with something as silly as that?
Why brain-shaped if you have no brain? He just doesn't get it.
Yep. It's interesting, though, because for quite a while we thought, okay, this storyline was originally meant for Ved, but would Ved have been able to pull this off to this level?
And maybe it was something like, you know, the debate of whether Danny's role was made solely for Amber in season 2,
mm-hmm.
and how it's probably somewhere in the middle. It's quite possibly both characters were meant to exist. And Danny played a smaller role, but also really important to the plot. Maybe Mega and Ved were meant to exist at the same time. Like, Mega was pulling the strings and utilizing Ved's emotional vulnerability to take him down a path.
That would have been interesting to see.
Yeah.
Due to lack of Tamsin, I'll press the missed opportunity button for that one.
But the-
Shut up! It's not fair to keep somebody hanging like this and then dump them in a note! Anyway, you can't dump me because we weren't even together.
But that's not what the letter says.
What?
Read it.
But Patch has found that this is the only way that he can get across his true feelings to her. They finally reach the same page. As yet, Spiffy, what did you make of the resolution of the will they, won't they plot of Patch and Dee?
I like the organic way May expresses her feelings and how that affects, you know, Dee's point of view. I thought that felt very natural that, you know, May is sitting here lamenting the fact that, you know, everything, May told no lies. Now, she may have been generalizing men, but if you're just talking pride, nothing she said was untrue, you know, and about, you know, his behavior. He is the guy who will say, I love you when he wants something. But when it comes to telling you that his feelings have changed, he's a coward. She's not wrong about that. And it makes perfect sense for May to be lamenting this. Like, oh my gosh, this guy has let me sit here for weeks and just couldn't tell me that he'd moved on to my bestie and then he didn't want to be with me. And he made me feel like a fool because he could have told me, you know, and you have Dee who's like, well, I mean, he was worried about you. And you know, May's like, nah, I'm not taking those excuses. Like, I know this guy. And I like it because it refers to the history they already had, you know, where she already experienced this behavior from Pride before she was taken, where he beat around the bush and didn't want to be honest with her about things. And I like how that organically influences Dee to doubt what's going on with Patch because his behavior's been here, there, everywhere. She doesn't know what to think. Like I said, you know, the guy confesses his love to her during a high stress moment and then is acting a fool ever since. And she's just like, what the frick, dude? You were able to say I love you and yet you can't even hold a conversation with me that makes sense since you said I love you. What the frick was that about, you know? And so I like that it gets to, you know, it her distrust of Patch didn't come out of nowhere. It made sense that it was influenced by, you know, someone else putting those ideas in her head. And again, the person putting those ideas in her head has every right to feel that way. You know, I thought that flowed really well.
Yeah, it really did. It's like, it's very natural for May and Dee to have a conversation like this and for both of them to feel the way they do. What I found interesting though, is that they specifically put Patch in an environment that looked very similar to, well, Jax, and being unable to truly say what he feels, it just gave me a lot of, like, earlier season Jack vibes.
Yeah, I felt that.
I just had a lot of Jack and Ellie flashbacks, I guess, during this, and it's made me kind of sad, because Patch is a nice character on his own.
I liked the Jane Austen of it all. How there's almost no conflict that can't be solved with a well-written letter. I thought that was actually a nice touch, you know. He's someone who, when he's trying to say the words, it's just word vomit, you know, and he finds, how can I express to this girl? I cannot say the words, but I know how I feel inside. And I even like the creative way they let us know what the in the letter, and we get to visually see him struggling to get that down on paper. I thought that was nice artistic choice. And, you know, then he leaves it for, he finishes it, he gets it done. And her first thought, because she just talked to May, is, oh, you're going to tell me you don't care about me in a letter? I don't want it. Okay. Say it to my face. And he, even in that moment, he's so desperate, he can't say it. He's just like, please just read it. That's not what I was doing. Please read the letter, you know? And I thought that was actually sweet. It made their connection, like, and made their, they will, you know, of the will they won't they, more unique to them, you know? It's specific to Dee and Patch. Patch is someone who can't say it. He cannot say the words he's desperate to say. And so he had to write a letter that is unique. We've never seen any other characters having that kind of moment that brings them together of the, okay, we're on the same page. I appreciated that. It does stand out as their own thing compared to everybody else. Everyone has their things. And considering these two haven't gotten the attention they deserved this season of building up this relationship, at least this moment is theirs. Too bad they only get two episodes together. They're poof, gone. I feel like a lot of time was wasted.
They fixed things between them, so now they can go.
Right.
So we can bring the originals back.
I mean, I enjoy a slow burn, but I also want focus on the slow burn. You know what I mean? Like, that's my favorite thing. Two people slowly being gravitating towards each other and longing looks and, you know, realistic misunderstandings and trust issues. I enjoy that, so that when you finally get there, it's satisfying. But I just don't feel like Dee and Patch got the attention they deserved for me to be truly satisfied by them finally getting together, you know? I feel like this could have been handled two episodes ago if he hadn't gone to Lex for whatever reason for advice. You know, just like... like, why'd you drag it out? I don't know.
I guess we should be just grateful that he went to Lex for advice and not to Bride.
No, I won't. I'm not grateful for that. It sucked. I hated it. And it was didn't even make sense for Patch to do it.
I'm just thinking about how much worse it could have been.
It's like, if you really needed two episodes of him not being... Just make him his normal, awkward self. Just couldn't say the words. And she's just like, what the frick is wrong with you? Why am I wasting my time? But whatever. It feels like a slow burn that, again, it's just not very satisfactory. And then they're gone. And we don't even get a goodbye, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't blame them for leaving. There's no happiness to be found in the mall. So they're like two of the smartest characters ever who realize we found something good. It will die and wither here. Let's go someplace else. But it,
without the drama.
Right. Like, I don't blame them. I'm just like, you couldn't even give us an entire season of enjoying them before they left. You made them leave two episodes after they finally got together.
To be fair, in Mallrats history, that's the safest way to keep your relationship. Get away from it all.
I wonder if they knew that the actors weren't coming back. It's possible they just didn't. The actors just both, you know, on their own decided they weren't coming back to the show. So that was it.
Oh, yeah. They must have known at this point. This is why they've suddenly rushed this relationship. It's a shame, because actually Patch has a reason to want to fight. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Brothers for brothers.
Forget about them.
We don't talk about brothers.
Yeah, I love that. Like, Patch joined this fight because the Technos took his brothers. Okay. And so it's like, I buy, you know, him sticking around because he wants to take down Ram. But it's like, you're not even going to wait to find out what happened to your brother. Okay. I could have used a conversation of you acknowledging that you're never going to give them back or something. And all you've got is the vengeance of taking down the person who took them away. But again, Patch and Dee were not given the time to develop and explore who they are.
That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
What have you been doing about that light, Amber?
You're absolutely right, Lex. Because I gave up too. Just like you did. I thought I'd lead my own life and not worry about the rest of the world. But you can't. Because that's what gives people like Ram their chance. Tysan wouldn't have given up. Nor would Bray. Or any of our friends. So what's it gonna be? Are we gonna fight the Technos? Or are we gonna fight each other?
Together.
Together.
Ultimately, though, the argument is sidetracked by the arrival of Trudy, bringing news of Brady's capture, which ends the episode. So, your panel, how did you react to the chaotic blow-up in the mall, the return of the Amber dynamic to the tribe, and Trudy's return?
Okay. There's some good and bad here. There's good and bad here, okay?
You have an alarm.
Don't! You guys do not want to know the hysterics I went into when that alarm went off. Laughing, crying, sanity broken at that point.
We needed, as said, they needed Patch to be a little bit more like Jack, so we remember we missed Jack.
The grill is closed. I'm like, where's the grill been this entire season? That thing hasn't been closed since the Technos arrived.
Well, no. Amber's in the building, so now we have someone to protect again.
Gosh, I couldn't believe. No, no. In a bubble, it makes perfect sense. It just doesn't fix anything, and it's made worse because you've had an entire season since an invasion took half of your tribe, and people continued to disappear, and you never closed your doors. And all of a sudden now,
Jay and Ember are in the building.
The grill is closed and you have an alarm again. And I'm just like, I hate you, season four. I hate you so much. Yeah, that one, that broke me. That was it.
But yeah, let's just start with the argument. I mean, I think it's a very fair point that Lex makes with him. So you trust Jay, right? But he's talking to the new commander. I mean, of course that's suspicious. And Siva instantly going on Jay's defense on this was interesting for me, at least. Because suddenly it's like, no, it's Jay, so anything Jay does must be legit.
It doesn't bother me that Siva is willing to hear Jay out. That's just coming from a place of reason. Like, okay, let's hear what he has to say. She's not saying that Jay's right and Lex is wrong. Just let's hear what he has to say. Let him explain himself, you know? And that feels like a Siva move. What bothers me is Amber saying, I trust... Why, Amber? Somebody, I just need a conversation as to how Jay has earned your trust. That's all I need, okay? I characters trust people, and they shouldn't, and that's fine. But you need to explain to me what Jay has done to earn Amber's trust in their few interactions. You're telling me that their great conversations in the woods have made her realize that this guy can be trusted at his word? He promised his girlfriend to run away, and then as soon as he came to your camp, changed his mind. That should tell you something about his character. He didn't discuss it with his girlfriend. He just decided to go back. He went to you first, Amber, and said he wanted to go back and convinced you to leave your child, and still hadn't said anything to his girlfriend, which was confirmed when she came and confronted you. So you know for a fact that Ebony was not in on that discussion about going back after they'd already made their plans. That should tell you something about his character. Why do you trust him? Why are you willing to risk everybody you know and love and the future safety of your child on his word, Amber?
It's not like she never had trust issues before. So why this guy?
I love the argument. I always love when the Mallrats have an argument because that's what people do. And I just enjoy hearing the different points of view. I enjoy hearing discussions be worked out. Again, you can make your characters do whatever they're going to do. You just need to let me know why they're doing it. That's all I need. Thank you. Okay. I don't have to agree with their actions. Their reasons can be flawed, but you need to give them to me. So I like the argument. I don't like the way they use this to stage Amber's return the leadership position. Even everything about the way the camera is lined up, like Celine is in the background of Jay, not standing beside him. Mm-hmm. She's in the background. She's already fading into the background. And then when she tries to stop the confrontation between Jay and Lex, she fails. Only Amber can stop the confrontation between them. Like, it's a boot to the face that Amber has retaken her role. You know, stand down. It was never really yours. You know, you were a totem until I could come back and take my spot. And it just feels very obvious. And I don't like that staging. It's bothersome to me. And yeah, Lex has every right to be like, dude, he's meeting with one of the technos. And the fact that they're all so quickly on board, to not really question that. And Lex is right, because Mega isn't trustworthy. Every time they follow Jay, it's a bad idea. And these people never learn.
And it's like, why is it okay for Jay to try and find out information about Ved, when it was never okay for them to try and find out information about their missing friends?
Like, I buy the mall rats that are in the mall and in the city who have had constant interactions with Jay. I buy them trusting Jay. I buy them weighing their options and being like, well, for the most part, Jay has been on our side. Okay. I buy Celine trusting Jay. Okay. I buy her being like, hey, Jay, you know, she thinks the world of this guy. Thanks for my hospital. That was my idea and I was going to get anyway. And I'm going to give you all the credit. I buy her. I don't buy Amber being the end all and be all on the word of whether they should trust him. I don't buy that. She doesn't have the experience with him that everybody else does to trust him. It makes sense for Pride to trust him. It makes sense for Siva to trust. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense for Amber to just be like, I trust his work. Why, though? Why? Because he watched your DVD? You didn't know that till he showed up in the woods, Amber. You left not knowing if that man was going to be so committed to finding out the truth that he'd even watch it. And yet you met him in the woods and you were just like, hey, baby boy!
And you instantly left your child behind.
Exactly.
And then poor Trudy comes in hysterical and you go, where's my baby? And the first thing she has to do is say, yeah, your kid's fine. Mine, however, was taken.
To be fair, she'd say, where's the babies?
Plural. Yeah, well.
Of course your baby's fine, Amber.
Trudy made sure of that. She's not letting anyone else's child get kidnapped.
The whole world has to take better care of your baby than they ever did of mine. Of course it's my kid who's in danger, Amber. Oh my gosh. I hate that this is what Trudy is always relegated to. I mean, this is what happened last time when Amber was taken. Trudy, you know, comes rushing to the mall rats. You guys help! They took Amber! Like, oh,
hey, first it was Trudy and Amber were kidnapped together. And everyone was like, oh no, but Amber's been kidnapped. We have to get Amber back.
It's odd. Yeah, since like mid-season 3, they've just not known how to develop Trudy anymore. It's odd.
Yeah, she went from a main character to just sidekick.
Yeah.
A tragic sidekick.
The lady with the baby. With the prop who you can kidnap. For drama's sake. I like that Hawk accompanied her, though.
I do love the look on Hawk's face. Like, he is so tired of this ish. He's so tired of it.
Don't blame him.
He's so sick of Amber dragging them into this stuff. He's just like,
here I am in the city again.
Again. Because you let those people come into our camp, and of course the technos found our camp and raided it. And a bunch of our people got taken.
And took our people.
Yep. What are you going to do, oh leader mine?
Help us.
And you know what's funny? I obviously know that Mega used this as a nice way to get Brady back to her mother and, you know, win favor with the Mallrats. Nice move on his part. But I do not recall if any of the other Gaians were rescued. Or if nope. Amber even gave a crap about him.
Nope. She did not.
Like, I could be wrong, but I don't recall any of the other guys being rescued from that prison camp. that they happen to be corralled in.
Nope, only Brady.
Just Brady. And as long as she's back, everything's cool. It's like, they took a truckload of your people, Amber.
And you don't care because you know all concerned. Because you know what they're going through, right?
Mm-hmm. You literally just used that logic on Lex.
I've been through this.
You can't put all the blame on Amber.
I'm not.
No, I'm just saying.
I think the story just, you know, ignores the rest of the Gaians, mm-hmm. you know? And Amber not caring, I'm just saying this to bolster Hawk's point of just being sick of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I were him, I'd be so over that.
I don't really blame Amber for much of what's going to happen. The writers did this to her because none of it is stuff that I believe Amber, the character, would do. I really don't. Really don't believe most of the things that are going to come down the pipe. You can't convince me that Amber would have done it. No, the writers just made her do it because it had to happen.
This is going to be so painful to watch.
It's so painful.
She seems to care about every other tribe except the one that took her in when she lost her memories and was left for dead.
Oh, man. But, yeah. Yeah, so this scene has good stuff and bad stuff, you know? I do think some of the bad stuff stands out more for me in this scene. The alarm broke me. It broke me, you guys. Is that it? Is that all we got?
Yep. Yep.
That's such a shame, because it's actually a good episode, but again, it's like, too late! It's too late! So weird when you think about TV shows, and it's like, what's worse, watching a great show die a slow, painful death, or a show being canceled when it's still at its peak? So, for example, I enjoy Firefly. It had one season. It's mm-hmm. one show I can say. It's like it's just one season and it's a perfect season. There's nothing wrong. And it's like the heartbreak of knowing it was canceled and what more could have been there. And it's like, why did they take it away from us? But it's like, would I rather it exist and it's just perfect one season, or would I rather it turned into the tribe and just break my heart and die slowly and in agony? You know, both of them suck, right?
Both suck, yeah. Yeah, it's a hard decision. Ooh. Yeah, that's some tough choice.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I don't know which one's worse.
You know what? No, actually, I'm gonna draw a line. Actually, yeah, for me personally, I think a great show getting worse is harder to cope with than just a fantastic one or two seasons. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. that pain, knowing that the writing was so great, the acting was so great, everything was so great, and then it just dissolves slowly and slowly and slowly. Yeah, I think I find that more painful.
See, Lance, that's called maturity right there. Because I've reached that point with Firefly too. I was like, you know what? I know it's a shame it was canceled, but I'd rather just have this one perfect season and a really great movie to follow it up than have to have watched it die or get worse. Mm. You know, they didn't ruin it. They weren't able to ruin it
because it was canceled.
It exists in this perfect little bubble. Brown coats forever, man. They can't take that from me.
All right, cool. That brings Series 4, Episode 50 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe.UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for Episode 51. So until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.